Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. I'm Seth Greenberg. Today, it's a family affair on Courtside as we welcome Arkansas head coach Eric Musselman and his wife Danielle to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to remind you to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. It really helps us and it helps other people find the show. Also, tell a friend about the world's greatest podcast. We bring it every week. We will have a take. We will give opinion. It's real. Two fired coaches who actually lived it. We have great guests. What else could you ask for? Also, check out the Woj podcast. This week, he sits down with Utah's Joe Ingles. Talk about another guy who brings it every week. Woj always has great guests and great conversation. He is the guru of the NBA. This week is no different. You can get the Woj podcast wherever you're listening to this podcast. And finally, before we get started, let's talk to about our friends at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band or being in a crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program, you can attend the contest or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events. You can sort by price or you can look seats in the section you want, the row you want, your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program. And when you make your next purchase, enter the code ESPN25 for a 10% off your next order. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theaters and shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Royalty Program today. And don't forget to use the promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get your favorite seats to your favorite live events.
For the win! Yes! Yes!
At the buzzer, McCord on its way!
Oh, my goodness!
They have to get it in. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside, the world's greatest podcast, known as Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. And we're going to have an incredible, incredible conversation with Danielle and Eric Musselman, the first family of Arkansas basketball. But first, D-Squared, I got a question for you.
Cool.
Baylor goes into Fog Allen and wins. West Virginia looks like the real deal. Duke might be playing better than anyone in the country. Gonzaga might not lose the rest of the season. San Diego State and Auburn are undefeated. Let's start with Baylor. What's your take on the Baylor Bears?
Well, you and I talked off air a couple days ago, and you made the point that they're getting production from guys that hadn't been productive at other places. And I was thinking about that, Seth. And when you think about Baylor, and you mentioned this, and man, is this true? You think about kind of what John Beilein did at Michigan. You think about player evaluation and player evaluation, how they fit into your team. How good are they really when given certain opportunities? Because Scott Drew has done the most underappreciated job maybe in the history of college basketball, taking that program from like half a year with the murder going all the way back to where it is. You make the argument it's number one team in the country. And it's not necessarily, it's not like doing it at Kentucky. You know, Indiana's been floundering. Indiana has never gotten as a blue blood to where Baylor is, or I guess maybe one year they did in the last 20, 25 years. But your point about player evaluation is so good. Because they've gotten players that, they're not five-star rated players. Couple played at other places and weren't necessarily overly productive. And now, man, do they fit? So evaluation and fit was always Beilein's thing. And that's what that's the first thing I see, Seth. It really is. Those two things are maybe better than anybody in the country right now. It has been Baylor at putting together a squad.
They've had more non-top 100 recruits that have played in the NBA.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing deal. To me, you know, the whole idea of, you know, they were a 1-1-3 zone defensive team. Tristan Clark went down last year. They had to go to the three guards. Freddie Gillespie, a guy that was playing Division III basketball. Right. He was playing Division III basketball, has become one of the most ferocious, reckless rebounders in college basketball. Davion Mitchell transfers. He's explosive. He can defend. They moved Jared Butler into the starting lineup. He's been as good as anyone. They get a transfer like Maceo Teague from UNC Asheville, who's made that transition. What they've been able to do, but here's the two things. They have guys that embrace roles, like Mark Vidal. I mean, that guy just, he does what he does well. Like, and then the other thing is, what is toughness? To me, toughness is doing the hard things every day. They defend and rebound every day. Those are the two hardest things to do in basketball. Because you've got to play really hard to defend, and you've got to be competitive as all hell to rebound the basketball. And they're relentless defensively, playing man, although they can play some zone. And they rebound like there's a steak on the rim, and you know what? They haven't eaten in a week. I mean, that's how fearless they are rebounding the ball. They are really – the pieces fit. Everyone does what they do. Everyone plays to their strengths, and that's coaching.
Yeah, and that's administrating too. I mean, that's – you know, the Indiana Pacers have played pretty well over the last year and a half without Victor Oladipo, and the reason is Kevin Pritchard, the general manager, had a team that fit each other, didn't have egos on top of each other. And I really started paying attention to that in the college game. And I'm not so sure Baylor isn't the preeminent team. And I'm not just talking about this year, Seth. I mean, what was it, like 2009 or 10 where they're in the Elite Eight? You know, I mean, this has been going on for a little bit. I think because they won for the first time in 1,000 years at Kansas, and now they're number two, and we're paying a little more attention to it, but this has been going on for quite some time down in Waco with Scott Drew. It really has. He's, I think, a master at just putting finding, evaluating, and then putting it together for his particular style. And look, the road isn't easy. I mean, you know, they got a couple road games that are going to, you know, give a chance to screw. But I tell you this, Seth, by already going to Kansas and winning, by already going to Texas Tech and winning, opens things up a little bit for you in the league moving forward. Does.
Well, the gold standard in that league 14 years before last year was obviously Kansas, yeah. Bill Self. They were at the top of the mountain by themselves. Last year, Texas Tech, Kansas State got a piece of it. The one thing you would love to see when you think about Baylor is like, look, Kansas has the best home court in the league, without a doubt. I mean, probably Texas Tech, West Virginia right behind it. I'm not sure Baylor's in the top five of best home courts.
No.
So they're going to have to hold serve. That, you know, games have to be events at Baylor. And then, unfortunately, for some reason, they're not events yet. And they are really, really, really good. So, all right. So Baylor's really good, and we think that maybe they're the best. Where's Duke in your mind? Because you know what? To me, excluding a hiccup against Stephen F. Austin.
Yep.
Wouldn't we talking about Duke being the team we're all looking for in college basketball this year?
Seth, the difference between Duke being undefeated at this time of year and San Diego State and Auburn being undefeated at this time of year in college basketball is immense. I mean, I guess it is disrespect to Auburn and San Diego State, but the history, the lineage of basketball at Duke, certainly over the last 40 years, makes it a national brand. They're one game away, and it's a hiccup at home. Okay, fine. I tweeted the other day, isn't it time we start considering Duke a great team? Look, we all want to say no team's great. No team's great. Well, I don't know. I watched Duke. They went down to Miami. It was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. It was a night game. It was, you know, Miami was all excited, and they won by 35. And I watched a Miami team have Illinois down by 30 about 3 weeks earlier. So, I don't, you know, we can, I guess the narrative is they're not a great team. Okay. But all I know is this. We've got some undefeateds, and we've got a Duke team that's one bad hiccup in a game that if they played 100 times, they'd win 99.5 of them against Stephen F. Austin. One away, and I don't see that train stopping anymore because I'm not so sure about your ACC, Seth. Not sure anybody can. Not sure anybody's going to handle Duke. Maybe Florida State.
It's a 3 or 4 bid league at best. Yeah. Florida State, I think, has legitimately the best shot. Sure. I love Florida State. I'm big on them. I think the interesting thing about Duke is by accident because of the Moore kid going down, they become more interesting because Jordan Goldwire and Trey Jones are two incredible on-ball defenders. And like Goldwire was a throw-in recruit 2 years ago. He's a junior now. They're more experienced, but he can really guard. And he, another guy that plays to his strengths and is tough, which enables Cassius Stanley to get out in passing lanes, which enables them to hide Matthew Hurt a little bit defensively. And now you've got another point guard who can pass it, which makes Vernon Carey all that much more effective. And then they're getting time, like Jack White coming off the bench, like, you know, he can kind of fit a lot of different roles. Devin Delaurier, he can fit a lot of different roles. Even Alex O'Connell and my man Joey Baker, they can fit a lot of roles. So they're deeper than they've been in the past, and they're more versatile than they've been in the past. So, I mean, like, Duke is really special. There's no doubt about it. Duke is, now let's go some guys, you know, that people don't give enough attention to. I'm going to throw San Diego State out, and I'm throwing you a little curveball. And I'll tell you what, I watch them. I look at them. They're for real. They shoot. I mean, they shoot it. They defend. They rebound it. They've got experience. They got 3 transfers. They're older. They're tougher. They share the ball. They've got legitimate depth. But I mean, you know, Malachi Flynn, Fagans, Yanni Wetzel, those 3 guys have been around the block. They've played a lot of basketball. Mitchell Kidd is stepping in now because they've had some injuries. I mean, they've got everything you're looking for and quote unquote, all the analytics in terms of their rebounding percentage, their defensive percentage. They run you off the 3. They don't turn it over. They turn you over and they make shots. They're really good. They're really good.
I got to ask you a question. This question was posed to me by the great Andrew Dockage. You ready?
Oh, we had. I figured we'd have some Andrew Dockage sighted.
He said, "Hey, Dad, you always talk about, you know, UCLA and Indiana and, you know, the great programs, all right?" He goes, "Hey, Dad, let me ask you a question. Two schools he used, and I'm just going to keep it to San Diego State. The other one was Butler relative to Indiana. But his question was, okay, UCLA's got all this history, plays in a bigger league, always on TV. Why has San Diego State been better over the last 10, 15 years than UCLA? What's the answer to that?"
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure they have been over the last 10, 15 years. I think they've been more consistent. Like Steve, they had that one run. When
yeah, they
Fish
had the run. See, I didn't go back and look at the numbers on that.
I'm not sure. Cause I mean, like, you know, Alford went to Sweet 16s. Ben Howland went to 3 Final Fours. I mean, you know, they've had some lean years, but what San Diego State's done is what we talked about Baylor doing. Evaluating up, like a big part of recruiting to me, it's the most underappreciated part of recruiting. It's evaluating up, not where a guy is right now, where a guy's going. What are his intangibles? What is his skill level? Is he a high school power forward that can be a small forward? Is he a high school small forward that can be a big point guard? Is, you know, seeing where a guy fits, in your system. Like I always say, the best assistant coaches know who can play for their head coach. The best assistant coaches look at it. I don't see where he is, but where he's going. And I think that's a big thing. They've done a great job with that. They've also done a good job of recruiting the geographic footprint, keeping guys in San Diego, which I think is really important. And they've created a great fit. Like basketball is more important. This sounds crazy. Basketball is more important on San Diego State's campus, and games are a bigger event on San Diego State's campus than they are on Pauley Pavilion at Pauley.
Why?
Pavilion. How's that one?
Why?
Well, every night's a sellout. I mean, it's why.
No. I know that, but here's my question. Like the question was a little bit deeper. Now, why has that evolved? Is it because UCLA, you know, fans always talk about how spoiled they are, you know, in different places like Indianapolis. They talk about how spoiled you are having Manning and then Luck as a quarterback and all that kind of stuff. You think it's because UCLA fans have a malaise to them and San Diego State's success is newer, so it's fresher, so we like it more? Yeah. You think?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that at UCLA, the bar is so high and unrealistic. They think John Wooden's not walking through there. They only hang national championship banners. They don't even talk about NCAA's Final Fours or Sweet 16, which is unrealistic in the world of college basketball. I mean, Duke hangs Final Four banners. Kentucky hangs Final Four banners. UCLA only hangs national championship banners. Come on, give me a break. If you can't celebrate a Final Four, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. You can't celebrate
the Conference of Champions.
Tournament.
It's not the Conference of Final Fours.
Yeah, it's okay. Who else from that conference has gotten to the Final Four?
That's a good question. Arizona hasn't, right? Back in the day, Arizona?
Back in the day, yeah, Arizona won national championship.
Yeah.
They have, but I mean, recently, I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, let me ask you this. I mean, like the Big Ten's been great, but you know, Michigan State's won national championships. They hang their Final Four banners.
It's a dumb thing for them to do. Let's be honest. It's a dumb, it's arrogant, it's outdated.
How about the player that made it to the Final Four because they didn't win a championship? They can't bring their kids into Pauley Pavilion and look up in the rafters and celebrate that with their kids? Come on, give me a break. Give me a break.
I'm with you on that.
It's an unrealistic expectation. So let's go another one. Are you buying West Virginia? Because I'm buying West Virginia.
Yes, sir. Yeah. What? Look, they may get beat by a team throwing in threes, but they ain't going to get beat by toughness. They ain't going to get beat by playing hard. They're not going to get beat by getting in a stance, playing defense, and sharing the basketball. Yes, yes, and more yes on West Virginia. I think you said it a couple podcasts ago. Press Virginia is a thing of the past. I see Bob Huggins. I don't think of Press Virginia. I think of what's happening right now, Seth. Look, every team goes through things. Every team, but if your team is consistent with its effort, its toughness, man, I don't think you can turn the TV on ever and see Bob Huggins, this year's West Virginia team, doing anything but busting it. I don't think you can. I don't think you will. I don't.
They're old school Cincinnati.
Yeah, yes.
Right now. They put you in a box. They push you down to the corners. They cut it in half. They're physical. They dare you to come and attack them in a rim. They rebound the ball. And now, Miles McBride, let me tell you something. That dude in the last four games is like 7 for 11 from 3, 16 points a game. He gives him a guard. They got to take better care of the basketball, but they turn you over still. They rebound the ball on the offensive end. They've got credible toughness and depth in their front court. Like, West Virginia is really good. They do have a very good home court. You know, I look at those three kind of separating themselves in Big 12 with Texas Tech. Slipped a little bit last week. I'm worried about their rebounding and their front court. Gonzaga, they're going to be off the beaten path. But so that, I think every week we've got to do a Gonzaga update.
Nobody knows, right?
Yeah, no one's talking about, like, look, they're off the beaten path. Yeah, they had the little hiccup. They didn't beat people by 30 when they went to Pepperdine and another. They beat San Diego by 50, but it still goes that skilled front court. They execute. They defend. Kispert's a killer. I mean, he's a killer. Joel Ayayi gets better every day. The only concern I have one concern for them. Tilly's health, cause he's really good. Petrushev we know is good, but Tilly's health is important. And the depth at the point guard position. Who's going to end up being their backup point guard? That's about the only concern I have for them.
Well, I would say that. Have you moved them up to second or third in the Big Ten?
Oh, no, that's you. Have you moved them up to second or third in the Big Ten? Because five Big Ten, top 10 Big Ten teams lost last week.
I know, and couldn't score 60. I think I watched two games of Gonzaga, and I think they're really good. I do. I think they're really good. I know they got to go to BYU and maybe St. Mary's. So maybe they lose one of those games. I don't know. And if they don't play better than they did against Pepperdine, but I'll give Pepperdine some credit, man. I thought they were playing really hard, under the nicest man in America. Lorenzo Romar, not named LaFonso Ellis. But I do think, how do I put this right? Because there's not going to be the, you know, they have always, you know, they got guys that have been there a long time, or they got guys that Zach Collins that emerge. This team could get bored because this team is going to beat people badly as we move through the season. People always forget. Like, you look at Pepperdine, you say, all right, they're really good. Well, people always forget that the teams that they're going to be playing by the time you get to February, mid-February, are going to start getting beat down because they get beat by other teams in Pepperdine. That's when Pepperdine's going to win these games by 30, I think, all through February. I do like Pepperdine. I do think Pepperdine would win the Big Ten. I've changed my tune, and I'm looking forward. I'm hoping that they'll be on our network before 1 a.m. because I'm old and I got a bad throat and I can't stay up. How about that?
All right. Here's a question. Before we get into Butler, because I want to talk about Butler because they got a big game against Seton Hall. And Seton Hall's playing really well right now, by the way. Miles Powell is killing it. I mean, guy averages 8 rebounds a game right now. I mean, before we get into that. All right. So I'm watching Michigan State and Purdue, and I am thinking your Big Ten mantra. And your Big Ten mantra is real simple, is that, like, that was a game, in my opinion, and I actually text this to Tom Izzo, is Purdue wasn't losing that game.
No. No.
They were like that was a perfect storm. They had to have that game. Defense lives in Mackey. They played with an energy and a toughness. That was a non-optional win. And they physically just beat the living crap out of Michigan State. And it looked like it was one of those days that Cassius, once he got beat down, he just didn't have anything left in him. Almost like his tank was empty. What was your take?
I think that I've said this many times. There are just sometimes in some gyms you're not winning. And Assembly Hall had that with Ohio State. Although, you know, Ohio State's struggling, I thought Mackey was absolutely that. No question about it. You mentioned some nights at West Virginia. There's just different places, not all places. And I thought Michigan State was playing pretty good. Like, I did the game prior on Thursday, and you know, Thursday game, and then you come back and you play at noon on Sunday. Maybe that's too hard. I don't think it is. I think that Purdue, as Izzo said, man, salute to Matt. That's a Gene Katie move right there. You're desperate. Katie would have practiced 17 times between, you know, the bad performance at Illinois. But no, there's Michigan State's good. They're not, you know, 16-2 in the Big Ten good. I don't think. Maybe they are, but I don't think so. But anyway, and Purdue can play like that. We saw Purdue absolutely kill Virginia, beat them by 30. So yeah, it's not surprising. Just sometimes in a gym, you're not winning, Seth. You're just not. It's not happening for some teams sometimes.
All right, so Butler, and we'll finish with this. Butler, Seton Hall, who you got?
I'm going to take Butler at home. I do think Seton Hall, and you mentioned Miles Powell's playing great, but I think the inside guys of Butler are playing fantastic. And I think that this is one of those Butler teams because, like, if I were going to rank Coach of the Year, I don't know, whoever you want to put up there, Scott Drew, if I were going to rank a first-team All-American winning team, it's Kamar Baldwin. And a leader of the year, I'd say Kamar Baldwin. I don't bet against Kamar. Kamar was my intern at the radio station, just the greatest kid, serious kid, nice kid, funny kid, all that kind of stuff. And he's been doing this for 4 years. So Seth, first game Kamar Baldwin played at Butler, hit a game winner, and he hasn't slowed down. I'll take Butler, but only because it's at home. But I will say this, this is interesting. People refer to Hinkle Fieldhouse as the cathedral and blah, 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 blah. Okay. They don't sell out all the time. It isn't one of those places where you're just not going to win tonight there. It's not that place. It just isn't. The seats go way back. So this isn't like walking into Purdue for Michigan State Wednesday night for Seton Hall. I'm going to take Butler because of Kamar Baldwin, but I'm not taking Butler because it's going to be overwhelming, to Seton Hall. I don't think Seton Hall gets overwhelmed, number one, but, number two, I love that kid, Kamar Baldwin. I love him. Don't like him, love him.
I think both of those two teams could be Final Four second weekend teams. I mean, I think they're both, Mamu Kelishvili, he's been out for almost a month now, and yet they've survived it. I mean, you know, they've won without Miles Powell. I mean, but Miles Powell is the real deal. Kamar Baldwin, that matchup, the Butler defense against Seton Hall, the pace of the game will be interesting. I watched Butler this weekend. I agree with you on the front court. Those dudes are tough.
They're big
and
tough.
I mean, that's like old school. And then on the perimeter, they bring off Jordan Tucker. He's knocking down jumpers. McDermott's knocking down jumpers. But those front court guys, that's like old school.
Yes.
You know, rock fight. But I mean, those dudes are physical.
Rock fight.
I mean, those dudes will knock you right on your keister. I mean, so there's some great games. There are some great games this coming week. We have our first game day game. And by the way, it looks like we'll find out shortly, but, you know, burgers, bourbon, and brackets looks like it's going to become a reality in New York, which, is terrific, but there's still an opportunity to have burgers, bourbon, and brackets in Atlanta for your group. If you're interested in having Dan and I come and basically entertain you on the Final Four teams in college basketball, no doubt.
Not only entertain you, make you money. I'm due for a streak. I am. I'm due for a streak. Hey, Seth, I got to get into one thing. We cannot leave without this. You ready?
All right. You got it.
Houston Astros fire their coaches and GM, coach and GM. Major League Baseball comes down crazy hard. I loved it. Why doesn't college sports do that? Why didn't college sports say, hey, man, this is too much. Your ass is fired. Your ass is fired. I saw that and I'm like, oh man, I go back to this thing where if you commit a violation, a major violation knowingly, or you didn't stop it or whatever the hell they fired that guy for, I'm for firing you. I'm for sending a message. Major League Baseball sent a message that college athletics, particularly college basketball, needs to send at some point, Seth Greenberg.
Here's my deal. I think college athletics saw North Carolina fight the NCAA and win and basically litigate to a draw. And because of that, I think everyone else says, you know, this is my guy. He's winning games. He's making money for us. Let's face it. And everyone's saying, you know what? Let's go to court. I mean, like if an FBI investigation comes down, like, and nothing happens, I just think that the universities have said, you know what? I don't care what's on the tape. Prove it. And, we're going to fight it. And, it's the state of our game. Like everyone talks about all the problems in our game. First of all, our game has no problems because our games are great. And you say it all the time. It never disappoints. Mm-mm. The leadership of our game is at times, I would say frustrating. And yeah, I thought that I'm interested to see what the Boston Red Sox, as a Yankee fan, I'm interested to see what the Boston Red Sox do. And I love Alex Cora when he was working at ESPN. Dude's a great dude. I mean, he's a great dude. But I'm interested to see what the Red Sox do because everyone gives the Yankees the evil empire, man. I mean, you don't see the Yankees involved in this stuff.
No, oh, please.
Just
they
saying.
They haven't been caught. They haven't been caught.
Just saying. I'm just saying. So, world's greatest podcast never disappoints. D-Square, you got to take care of yourself, bro. I mean, college basketball needs you. So we need the best. I know you play hurt. I know there's no load management, but we need the best of Dan Bakker. So we got to get you healthy.
I'm good, but I'm looking at myself in the mirror and I'm disgusted by what I look like. So I'm going to go eat nothing for 6 days and work out 24/7.
I killed it today. I killed it already this morning. Let's go. On the other side of the break, we'll be joined by Danielle and Eric Musselman, the first family of Arkansas basketball. I'd like to welcome in to me the most dynamic husband-wife coaching duo in all of college basketball, Danielle Musselman and the head coach of the Razorbacks, Eric Musselman. And I'm going to go right to you, Danielle. You had a tweet the other day, and if you have to follow Danielle on Twitter because it's classic, and then you'll end up following Mariah, but we'll get to that later. You had a tweet a couple of weeks ago saying that 9 years ago, we were living in an apartment and you were coaching in front of 100 people. I'm so proud of you. Tell me, like for everyone who thinks that like this coaching life is magical, like, what has this journey been like?
I hate it. First of all, thank you for having me. I think I probably burst a few bubbles if anyone thought that it was magical. But really, I just want people to know that this, you know, it's not just always an upward trajectory. You know, Eric was an NBA head coach when he was 38 before I met him. And whenever I did meet him, he wasn't coaching at all. And so I've really seen him you know, from the process of getting back into coaching. And like I said, coaching in front of a couple hundred people where we literally packed up all of our stuff and went to Reno, Nevada for nothing, just trying to get it back on and then seeing the hard work pay off. And then, you know, walking in now into a sold out arena, 19,000 people. It's surreal, honestly, for me. And I'm just so proud of him because he knew what he wanted to do. I tried to convince him back in the day to stick with broadcasting. I was like, you know what? You're really good at this. There's, you know, you're in a great mood after every single game that you call. Why don't you just stay in this lane? But he knew what he wanted to do. And, his hard work paid off and, people are realizing that he's actually a really great coach.
Well, he's a really great coach and a really great guy. I mean, but you have humanized him, Eric. How has Danielle changed your approach? Because you know I know all the stories.
I know. That's what I have heard. You know what? I think it's his love for his family is how I'm able to have any control. That's the only I know at the end of the day, he really cares what his family thinks and really wants his family around him and, you know, knows that we're going to be here at the end of the day. And so that forces him to, like you said, to be human and to, you know, just suck it up after a loss eventually.
I like the way you said the word forces him. Because yeah. that implies it's not natural to suck it up.
Oh, not natural. Right. I give him like when we lose a game, I'll give him that day to be in his bad mood and I won't really say anything. And then after the next day, that's when I'm like, all right, it's time to get over it. Get off the couch, get over it. he forces himself to say, oh, okay, I guess.
Hey, Coach, I watched your team go into Indiana and pull it out. I mean, you were down 10, you came out, and you made shots and all that kind of stuff. But there was a togetherness that you apparently you have to have to come into Bloomington. If you don't mind talking about how you got this done here with the team so quickly.
Well, really, Coach, I think it just came down to, you know, we did a lot of team bonding stuff in the off season and I think one of the things that you've got to convince college student athletes is just that the game is never over and how you've got to play through 40 minutes and how there's ebbs and flows. And, my dad, who was a coach, I can just hear him when I'm, you know, 7, 8 years old, always talking about he felt like there was 3 runs in every game. And can you try to win 2 of the 3 runs and how you have to fight through the opposition's runs? And, you know, that Indiana game was really important for us. Our first road win, in an environment that everybody knows historically is a very difficult place to play. And then you add in the fact that Indiana's strength, in my opinion, is their front court, and their ability to rebound the basketball. And that is our weakness, to say the least. And we were able to, you know, to try to turn the game into, our style of play. And it's been interesting because we've always been, you know, heavily guard oriented the 4 years at Nevada, but we've taken it a little bit to an extreme and at times have played with 5 guards, 3 point guards on the floor at the same time, even. And it's a hard team to match up with, although we do struggle, obviously, on the defensive backboards.
You talk about changing and fitting your system to your personnel must, like your experience coaching at every level of basketball. I mean, you know, I look at you, I look at Nick Nurse, I even look what Chris Beard has done at Texas Tech and saying, wait a second, this is my team. How do I win with them? What's your approach been, you know, since you've left the NBA, using those other, you know, experiences all over the globe, basically coaching to help you kind of figure out your team?
Well, really, Coach, that, you know, like I think that you're always a product of who you've worked for. And you get to see, you know, and learn from great minds. And I've been so fortunate to one, grow up in a household with a coach that I think is one of the greatest defensive coaches, and somebody who was an NBA coach as well as a college coach with my father. But then I got to work with Doc Rivers, Chuck Daly, Mike Fratello, Lon Kruger. So I've been around so many great coaches, and have been able to learn from them. But I do think people like Nick Nurse, when Phil Jackson, George Karl, when those guys, when you get to coach in the minor leagues, you get to experiment, and you get to try different things, and there's not as much media scrutiny, and then your roster is constantly changing. Your two top scorers could get called up, and you might pick up two guys that are non-scorers. And so you've got to constantly adapt your philosophy, your style of play. And then I think a huge turning point, and I was actually, you know, coaching with your brother, Brad, when we did the overseas, Venezuela, and I also had done the Dominican Republic before that, their national teams, and to play in FIBA basketball, it really opened up my mind to a lot of things. One, style of play, two, ball movement. But maybe more importantly, it made me become a better teacher from a demonstration standpoint due to the fact that those players, only about half the team, if that, spoke English, and I speak horrific Spanish. So, it forced me in timeouts to slow down, my delivery. And then also in practice, I think it really, really helped, explain and demonstrate and really slow everything down as far as putting stuff in and so forth.
Hey, Danielle, when you're traveling, you know, and your husband is, you know, now you get good, so everybody's going to yell and scream. Do you ever take things personal?
You know what? It's hard not to. And it got that way the last year when we played in the Mountain West. And it's interesting. The first 3 years, you know, no one really paid us too much attention. But that last year, whenever we were ranked in the top 25, and we went into the season thinking like, oh, this is awesome. We're seventh in the country. But really, it just put a target on your back, and fans were brutal. And it got to the point where, I mean, I remember being, I'm not going to say which arena it was, but my daughter, who I think was 7 or 8 at the time, just started crying just because people were being so mean to her dad. And, you know, it's not fun. It hasn't happened to us so far this year. I think I've been on the road 4 or 5 different games, or maybe I don't even know, maybe 4 different places I think I've been. And I haven't had that experience yet, this year, but last year in the Mountain West, it was brutal.
Yeah. It's hard not to take it personal, right? I mean, I remember my wife at Akron, she's got the tuba player almost killing him.
it's hard. And, you know, really, I pride myself with just not saying anything. You know, you just kind of sit there and you just take it. People are just sit right behind you, just yelling the worst things that you can imagine at your husband and these kids that are basically like my second sons. And it's hard. It's hard not to say anything, but you just kind of have to sit there and take it. Because, you know, fights in the stands, in the age of cell phones, that's not a good thing to get into either.
That's not great.
No. Yeah,
not great. And another example of things that people don't realize that coaches' families, coaches' wives, especially, because let's face it, Eric, you're involved in the game, you're coaching your team, but the things around it that, you know, impact, like my wife, when the game got close, she used to go up into the concourse and just walk around. Because she didn't want to have to deal with like up one, down one, up two, you know, all of a sudden we lost the game. Now I got a question. You guys are pretty active on social media, but there's two different kind of positions. Like Eric, you're like Aristotle, man. Like, I mean, you're like the great philosopher. Each and every day I gotta go check. You motivate me every day. I mean, you know, I make sure that Jake's in good shape, Jake the dog, because, you know, you make sure the messaging's right. And then Danielle, you're on the other hand, whether it's Instagram or whether it's Twitter, I mean, it's, you know, it's the must bus. It's, there's this goodness and happiness and fun. Is that pre-planned?
That's an accurate description of our family. Would you say so, Eric?
I would say so. But the funny thing is, Coach, it's not pre-planned. It's all spur of the moment. And, obviously my coaching tweets and stuff, that all started. I used to do a coaching email to coaching buddies, and it grew so big, that I couldn't do stuff through email anymore. And it was basically just sharing articles or sharing quotes from articles. And then it really, you know, turned once I got to college, because it opened so many doors with AAU coaches and high school coaches And it's really helped on the recruiting trail to walk into a high school gym that you've never been in and have a high school coach or a high school assistant coach say, hey, I follow your Twitter and I'd love to ask you about this tweet. But I'll let Danielle talk about all the fun stuff, because any really good idea that I have on Twitter that's fun and outside the box and is non-motivational or non-coaching, certainly the star of that behind the scenes is not me, but her.
No.
there are some classic ones too now.
It's, you know what, and it really, our fan base loves it. And I think that it really makes people feel like they are part of our family, like they know our family, and it makes them want to come out and support us every single week. And so, I mean, for that, that's just priceless. And the reaction has been huge here in Arkansas. I don't think I expected it to happen this fast, but people are really into it to the point that my daughter went with us to Indiana, and after going to Little Rock, and the game in Little Rock was just, the fans were so into us that we walk out of our hotel room to go to the game and there were 200 fans in the lobby, and no one loves it more than our daughter when people are asking her for her autograph and asking to take pictures with her. So we're about to go to the Indiana game. And I said, Mariah, just so you know, we're the away team. No one's going to be in the lobby. No one wants your autograph. No one wants a picture of you. And she says, well, is the game still going to be on TV? Yeah, it's going to be on TV. She's like, all right, I still want to go then.
Hey, I did a little Twitter stalking here of this whole thing. So Mariah wants to know, and apparently you haven't answered it. Why don't you sit on the bench, Danielle? I just saw this tweet from her. You apparently haven't.
The real reason is because I feel protective over my players. And when Eric yells at them during the game, it makes me want to yell at him. Yeah. So that wouldn't be a good thing. Yeah. That wouldn't be good during the game. So I need to.
And hey, you guys, trust me, when I do get home, I do get yelled at. Like, why did you yell at Adriel? He got 9 rebounds. And so it does happen. I got to tell you guys a quick story. Sorry to interrupt, Danielle. But the other night, we changed our defensive philosophy with about 8 minutes to go against Ole Miss, and we started face guarding Ty Reed, one of their best players. And then we kind of, you know, sent an extra defender at him when he did catch the ball. And I was explaining this to Danielle, and she said, oh, that's great. Why didn't you do it the first 32 minutes of the game, you dummy?
Yeah. So
that's the type of self-coaching I get at home.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Danielle, has this helped you, your background in media? Has all this help, it's got to have been a big help when you go through all this stuff, right? And the Twitter stuff?
Absolutely. It's interesting. What I did not expect is, because of Eric's platform, we are able to do a lot in the nonprofit world and really raise a lot of money for a lot of different charities. And because I have, you know, the public speaking ability, it's easy for me to jump in and help out and do different things with these events. So that's the main thing. And also, you know, the social media stuff and all that, I've kind of been a pretty public person. I've been on was on national TV since I was, I don't even know, 26. And so that was no problem for me. And so I don't mind putting ourselves out there. We're just pretty open. And so I think that helps, because I think suddenly being thrust into that spotlight can be a huge shock and a huge change for a lot of people. But for me, it wasn't really that big a deal. Actually, I'm more famous now being married to Eric and not working in the broadcast world than I ever was when I was on TV.
Wait a second. You had a big time gig. Let's not fall. I mean, you were here at ESPN doing big time stuff and big time events. So, I mean, that's not true. But when you're in a college town,
it's a different
your life. Your life changes. Eric, how much different is it for you? I mean, you obviously coached in the NBA, and then you've coached in every level possible in quote unquote minor league basketball over the world. But being in a college town, it's great, and it's a little bit exhausting because there's very little privacy now, except when you get sent to the pool house after a loss, I hear.
Yeah, I mean, the just listening to Danielle, the funny thing about the whole situation is, in reality, she made a lot more money than me when we first started, you know, met. I wasn't even working. And then coaching in the D League and coaching overseas, she was still making a lot more money. And so when we made the decision that, you know, that we were going to go the college route, stick with it, and she was going to stop working, that is always on my mind. Like, it'll be a 2-point game. And I'll be thinking, like, I got to keep my job because she gave up. She was the breadwinner in the family. And she gave. So I actually have more internal pressure knowing what my wife's career was than I actually do on the wins and losses.
How'd you guys meet?
Eric, do you want to tell the story?
We probably have a little bit different versions, but I will tell the story. We met at a coaching clinic. She was up front speaking. I was watching her. I was sitting next to Lawrence Frank, who was then the head coach of the New Jersey Nets. And I said, Lawrence, I got to meet her. So the clinic ended. I went up, tried to talk to her. I came back. Lawrence said, did you get her phone number? I said, no. Lawrence said, I'll go get the number for you. He walked up, came back 2 minutes later, said, you have no chance. She's taller than you and I, and she's way out of your league. Couple hours later, there was a get together out by the pool. I did get her digits, the phone number, and then the rest is history.
I mean, all right, Danielle, so the question begs, why him?
I'm still trying to figure that out. You know what? It's funny because I clearly remember meeting him and thinking, wow, he's so nice and he's so funny. I like clearly remember thinking that about him. Now I'm like, can you be nice? Can you laugh sometimes?
Oh, geez.
So I don't know. Whatever it was, he put on this great persona, and I totally fell for it. And you know, it's been 11 years now, so something he's got something going on.
That's great.
I mean, so when you move forward here, and as Eric just said, you stop being the breadwinner. Eric's got, you know, different jobs, different places. Do you ever look and go, wait a second here, what the hell did I do?
No, every week, but it's not. But you know what? It's not anything to do with Eric. It's more stuff to do with my daughter. When I'm like working at a free book sale in the gym of Holcomb Elementary School, I'm like, what happened to my life?
Right.
I used to make a lot of money on Tuesdays, but you know, it's all good. I really wouldn't change anything. And I feel fortunate to have had that great career. And then I just feel like this is another phase in life. And this phase in life is awesome too. So, you know, I just feel blessed to have my family and to have had, you know, some of the experiences that I've had.
Sure.
Sure. Hey, so your team right now, your style of play, obviously, you know, you've got two guys that have really kind of taken over, but playing the 4 and 5 guards, getting Jimmy Witt to come back. Isaiah Joe, though, that dude is a cup of Joe. I mean, like when he gets it going, it's ridiculous. You've been around good shooters. How good is he?
He's a phenomenal shooter. I mean, the thing with Isaiah too is we don't feel like he ever takes a bad shot. I mean, you know, the beauty of having a limited roster, you know, which we did at Nevada, but really only playing 7 guys, is guys can play through their mistakes and they really don't have to look over at me, because we don't sub that much. Guys have unlimited freedom and unlimited green lights. And Isaiah's, you know, he'll take a step back 3-4 feet behind the college 3-point line. And for us, a bad shot or a questionable shot for him is been a lot of other guys taking shots. And so, but he is one of the best shooters that I've ever coached. And I'll tell you guys, the one thing that's underrated about Isaiah is his defense. You know, in our old Miss game, he came up with 2 incredible steals. Every single night we go into the game and we do not worry about who he's defending. And when you can do that and do it with a guy who's one of your premier scorers, and a guy that plays on both sides of the ball, it also elevates his teammates because everyone knows he's going to get the bulk of the shots. Everybody knows he's going to get plays run for him. But then when he goes down to the other end and does the job that he does defensively, I think it really helps your overall team chemistry.
Coach, one of the things that I do think is very cool is in modern social media, and I'm curious because I knew your dad. I got to go to dinner with your dad and Coach Knight when I worked for Coach Knight 100 years ago. Guys come into the locker room now after a win, and they got to jump into the crowd, get doused with water, and then you got to dance. I've always said, like, my sorry ass, I'm glad I played and coached in an era where we didn't have to dance. How are you with all that?
Coach, he's right in the middle of it.
I know. I want people to know.
It's so interesting because really before I got to Nevada, I think everybody associated, you know, my personality and coaching style with my dad. Old school, really disciplined. And I think, you know, to me, the coolest thing about coaching in college is having a partnership with other coaches on campus. It's about being around the student body. And so it kind of just changed my way of thinking to have a little bit more fun and enjoy it. Maybe that comes with age, too, where, you know, you just feel more comfortable, you know, in who you are. And but, yeah, the locker room stuff, I do think there's a fine line, too, because like for us, we like to have our social media people around because of recruiting. And I think really that's what's changed the game is this recruiting aspect. And how do you let recruits and their parents look behind the curtain and see what's going on? And that's been the biggest factor in why we've kind of opened things up and also why you've got to have a little bit more fun. I just think that that's kind of the nature of our society right now. I remember I was one of the first NBA coaches to let the microphone and TV in at halftime. I'll never forget that first NBA coaches meeting that we had after the season and the looks and the tone of some of the premier NBA coaches and how mad they were that we opened up halftime to allow a camera to come in during a national TV NBA game. And but society has just changed so much with this social media stuff that you've got to adapt and accept it and actually embrace it, in my mind.
Yeah, because the NBA and college halftimes, man, I mean, there's some state secrets being set there. There's some stuff that you can't let get in the hands of the Iranians or the Iraqis because that stuff's important stuff, man.
Hey, but here's the thing. My question is, what in the world were you thinking when you took the shirt off? You said you tried to help recruiting.
Coach, the truth of so what happened? It was the first year at Nevada.
We won the
CBI championship, and I was going to put the championship shirt on, and the guys grabbed me, and I had half a shirt on, and so that started it. And then it just kind of became a thing with our team and Nevada. And it only happened really NCAA tournament berths or NCAA tournament wins. And, certainly as I've gotten older, I either have to increase my cardiovascular work or I have to keep a shirt on at all times going forward.
How about the pants and the polo shirt coaching?
You know, growing up in San Diego, California, it was really hard to get me out of anything but a hoodie and a pair of shorts. And so I actually hate wearing a tie. I hate wearing a suit. And it started that second year at Nevada because when you go play in one of the, you know, an event that's a, you know, a two-game event in Las Vegas or you're in Hawaii or whatever, you know, people are wearing polos and a pair of slacks and tennis shoes. And so I just felt like it was so comfortable to coach in. And then you add in the fact, you guys, about how much money is saved on not having to buy suits, no dry cleaning, and you coach more comfortably. So we've rolled with that. And it's actually been pretty cool. Our recruits love it. And, you know, it's kind of something that we hope to continue. Although, you know, if you lose a couple in a row, there'll probably be some people on Twitter saying that we lost because I wasn't in a tie and I was coaching in a polo.
Oh, yeah, they will. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that, big dog. Oh, yeah. Hey, before we let you guys go, you know, I want people to understand something here. Like, what do you think? And I know you're not bragging about it and you don't brag about it, you know, but I'm asking. So if you don't want to answer, fine. How much money you think you've raised for folks in the short time you've been at Arkansas?
I'll let Danielle talk about that.
Yeah. In the nonprofit sector?
Just whatever you put in somebody else's pocket.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I can't even imagine. I just know from what we've been told, just as far as ticket sales, I think we already have 5 games that are sold out. And from what I've heard, did they have maybe 1 sellout last year, Eric? I can't remember, but I know attendance is way up. So, that's one thing. As far as on the nonprofit side, I'm actually having, an event at our home, a watch party next week. And, I believe the goal is $20,000 and I think that we'll hit that. So that's just on the nonprofit side. I just know, people don't realize that unlike a lot of schools and universities, we're the only thing in Arkansas. So it's, you know, it's not just the city or the surrounding cities. It's the entire state that really support Razorback basketball. And it's like nothing we've ever seen before. So I just think, I can't even put a number on it, but I would say it's insane.
Yeah. No. That's why I asked, because I knew it wasn't $5 in a Starbucks coffee.
No. Wait, and Seth, before we go, I have to tell you, I Twitter stalked you, and I think that you need to talk to Eric about maybe his Twitter bio, because Eric, in Seth's Twitter bio, it says something like, husband to a queen. And I wow. thought that was pretty amazing. Am I right, Seth?
Thanks for getting me in trouble, Coach.
Hey, right after that it's Walker of Jake the Wonder Dog. So, I mean, you get an understanding of my life right now. So, I mean, I can't take full credit for that because, the person that actually did that, all that stuff is my oldest daughter, Paige, who, basically tells me how illiterate I am on every time I make a post. But, yeah, let's face it, coaches' wives, and I say this, and Eric, you understand it. Dan, you understand it. It is one of the hardest, responsibilities that anyone, a wife can have, because their husbands who they love are in the public eye. You win, things are great. You lose, the guy's an idiot. You're sitting in a public forum. You can't say how you really feel. You can never be off. You've always got to be on. And you've got to live it every single day. And the outside people only see the glamorous stuff, but the day-to-day part of it is grueling. So, I mean, the reason we wanted both of you guys together is because I just don't think people realize, and you know, obviously Daniel and Eric, I know you guys in a different way because you saved my brother's career, and we'll always be indebted for that, and hiring him for that Venezuelan national team assistant job, which opened up doors for him to coach again. But you guys are a great lesson for coaches and coaches' wives that as a team, it's amazing what you can do.
Yeah. Thank you. That's nice of you to say. And I love
thanks,
brother.
Coach. I will say I this too. Brother. I mean, the best thing about Danielle is we have like literally the best recruiter in the entire nation, is my wife. So when we have recruits on campus, I mean, our assistants are great. They do an incredible job. I try to work as hard as I can, but we got the closer when they come to our house. Danielle's incredible with recruits and their parents.
That's so great. We appreciate you guys.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Have a great
the Must
afternoon.
Bus. Let's go.
The Must Bus. That's a great name.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.